This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, hello there, everyone. It is a brunch day, a Monday brunch day, and we're bringing it back. This is our third time where we're going to talk music because, you know, whether you like it or not, I know you look at us like the most important, smartest people talking about movies in the history of the game, really.
Correct, definitely.
But what we actually know probably a little bit more about is music. So we talk about music a lot. We decided sometimes we maybe just want to talk about those nostalgic albums and we want to give them a review.
Yeah.
Yes. And we did Sublime Self-Titled. We did Creed. What was the title of that album?
Human Clay.
Human Clay. Now we're doing Limp Bizkit, Chocolate Starfish, and the Hot Dog Flavored Water. And I know what you're thinking. Illegal. And I know what you're also thinking. That album sucks. Oh, I guess what? You probably haven't listened to it in about 20 years. So,
and it's subjective.
Yeah. So, music and movies and art are subjective.
You can't do anything about it.
So we're going to decide. We went back and we listened to this album again all the way through. And we're going to decide maybe Modern Eye, does it suck? Or maybe do you just think about it the wrong way? Now you need to give it another listen.
Yeah. I have a history with this album.
What's your history with this album?
I'll just say that I don't even know the first time I ever heard Limp Bizkit or like what made me get the CD, but I got the CD and I got it at Walmart, which is a bad move because that edited version.
Oh,
it's all they have there.
Yeah. And I think it was a move on my mom's part, I want to say. But like,
she got you.
We would listen to it in the car as we were heading somewhere. And I would do the swear words accidentally. And I'm like, oh, sorry. She's like, you know, you just keep, you know, you keep your fucking mouth shut sometimes.
She would say, fuck, yeah. What the fuck are you talking about, Chuck?
Yeah, I just loved this album. And I loved like Roland, me and my friend Jordan, who should sponsor the podcast by now.
Jordan really should sponsor the podcast.
We'd listen to it in his basement all the time and just sing the lyrics and hang out and then watch Cliffhanger and shit.
This
and,
is your first probably album that you ever owned by Limp Bizkit?
Yes, okay. Definitely.
First and only, maybe?
I think this is the only record I only owned or ever owned. But loved it. Didn't know that it was way too long at the time.
Okay. AJ, what was your first experience with this album?
Kind of a similar thing. Except for the fact that I knew like two songs off of this album and two and a half. Two of them were Roland. one of them was just that part where it's like, ladies and gentlemen. Like that part.
Yeah.
I remember that part really good.
That's a lot of songs.
Man.
By Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, you're right. Get up. Now you're going to do the thing. That's basically what Fred Durst is and does.
His own hype man.
Great. Yeah, he's great at it. And I let's be real, guys. I was far too innocent and to be able to listen to something like this. Do you know how many F-bombs are dropped in that verse? 46. He says it.
He counts it.
He tells you. So
like, don't worry. I will do the work for you.
Don't like, even try to count this.
I just wanted to make sure. Like I got an entire season's worth of HBO in one song. So
you had never heard this all the way through until now?
Never heard it all the way through.
Ooh.
Wow.
So an experience.
I am a giant Limp Bizkit fan. Like when Korn and Limp Bizkit hit the scene, this was me. Like, I'm all about this. I was a Pearl Jam fan, and those two bands brought me into like the new metal world, right?
Yeah, I'm sure Fred Durst had a beef with, what's his name? Gavin?
Gavin DeCrosh.
Yeah.
Gavin Vedder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I actually got some like X Games sampler CD that had, I think it was Stuck from Limp Bizkit's first album, $3 Bill Y'all, which I will still go on record. $3 Bill Y'all is one of my favorite albums ever.
Just funny thing about that, as I heard, or I had this album, Chaka Starfish, and I was like, I need more. But I did, like, I wanted the other
Significant
one.
Other.
Yes.
Yep.
And I went to Walmart and I'm like, well, they only have $3 Billy.
Did you get it?
I'll just get it. And I didn't like it.
Oh,
cause I just wanted that song that was on,
yep,
you know,
of course.
I have grown to know that that is probably their best.
That's their best artistically. Significant Other, I think, is their best all around album.
Okay.
And then this one's definitely the biggest commercial success. This is the one that took them over the edge into nothingness. Like, yeah. This was they hit the peak and fell off tumbling after this. But this was their third studio album, released on October 17th, 2000. And what's crazy about that is, think about this. Significant Other came out June 22nd, 1999. So we're talking like 14, 15 months later. To not only tour a giant album and then go into the studio, write and record it, and release it.
Yeah.
Like, this is back then. They used to just churn albums out.
I had read reviews on this, and a lot of them were just like, it seems pretty rushed.
It does.
It seems like they were just kind of slapping shit together just to ride the success, you know?
It's very true of a lot of the bands at that time. Like, if you know much about Pearl Jam, like, they did 10, and that was the one that just broke them on the scene, versus was like a very polished sophomore album. And then their third one was Vitalogy, which was just like pretty much them just fucking off, basically being like, we can do no wrong. And that's kind of how this album felt to me a little bit. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Isn't it weird how bands will like have a name for an album for like their first three, and then like their fourth or fifth one is a self-titled? That always irks me. I don't know why, but I...
Well, what are we going to call this one? I don't fucking care.
We are out of everything.
Pearl Jam? Okay, let's just call it Pearl Jam.
Jeral Pam?
That's funny. That's funny.
They will never let us do that.
Dude, they aren't going to get that joke.
Maj LaRep?
Yeah.
Just do it backwards, right?
Yeah.
Well, actually, funny enough, do you know what they wanted to call this album?
Yes.
Limp Dependence Day. And it was abandoned after the band failed to meet the deadline for their original intended release of July 4th.
Yeah.
It would have been awesome.
Damn.
I was watching a retrospective of Limp Bizkit today, and I heard that one of their names that they wanted to call themselves was Blood Fart.
Oh no!
Write a song
or Fart Blood, something like that.
Write a song.
Like we will get into it, but I do think that this band is just pure tongue in cheek, and they know what they're doing.
I know,
yeah.
And maybe that's what the downfall of them was that not enough people realized that.
Yeah.
I don't think like they're seriously talented at what they do, but they fell into this niche that no one else has ever sounded like.
Yeah.
Or ever did before them. And I mean, think about where they were at right now. This album debuted at number one, selling 1.1 million copies in the first week. Only 23 albums in history have sold over 1 million albums in their first week.
Oof. 21 albums?
23
albums.
And they came in, they're the number 22nd album of all time to sell over a million. 400,000 of those were on the first day. The largest first week sales debut for a rock album in the United States ever since the Nielsen SoundScan began tracking albums in 91. Fifth highest week debut sales of 2000. Listen to what came out in 2000. Eminem, the Marshall Mathers.
Oh, yeah.
NSYNC, No Strings Attached, Backstreet Boys, Black and Blue, Britney Spears, Oops, I Did It Again.
I mean,
and this came in right behind those.
Yeah.
I already said that, but 10.4 million albums total is what this has sold.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, it got me. I was one of them.
I mean, and it was in the heyday of CDs too, when like you just had to buy this.
Yeah, true.
You had to have the CD. You needed to add it to your library like in your in the trunk of your car.
You mean the sleeve?
The sleeve.
Yep.
Yes, library that you have
that will inevitably get stolen.
Right.
With your CD face.
Correct.
But I mean, you got to have it.
Yeah. I mean, it's important to have it so you can make the robbery more easy. You yeah. know, for everyone.
And that it was the grand plan of the record companies, because then you had to buy it again.
Yeah, and then System of a Down was like, "We're just gonna say it, steal this album."
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Did you know what they did for promotion for this?
No,
they had a huge party at the Playboy Mansion with they had Chino Moreno from Deftones, David Silvera from Korn, Mark McGrath from Sugar Ray, Brandon Boyd from Incubus, and Ja Rule, and then like a shit ton of other like playmates and everything. And then they had like an hour long special on MTV where
I watched that.
Where Fred Durst was just like, "Hey, we're fucking hanging out and shit," and he's just drinking. You
know? I watched that.
That's amazing.
You just unlocked a core memory.
Is that right? Oh God!
Wow.
I just imagined like Carson Daly just trying to like get in there and like as a joke, they wouldn't let him in or something. It's like, "Well, we're outside of Limp Bizkit's mansion, just hanging out here outside the gate. Hey guys, can I come in yet? No. Okay, fine. Nope.
My name's probably on the list.
My girlfriend's in there. A lot of people's girlfriends.
Yeah.
Well, let's drop into the tracks. So we're going to go one by one here. Normally I don't mind an intro track.
Yeah.
But this one just doesn't do it for me.
It's pretty 2000.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's also pretty 2000 and very Limp Bizkit. You know, it's like that weird Limp Bizkit is in the house.
Here's the thing. It was supposed to go somewhere, and then it didn't. And then they just decided to start into the next song.
But think about it. The next song being Hot Dog is like the perfect intro to an album ever.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So what you're saying, it was a mistake to have the intro on this album.
Yes.
There you go.
And we are saying least favorite and favorite songs here.
Oh, that's true.
I'm not even counting an intro as a song, so I'm not going
to. No.
But if we were, this would be my least favorite song, the intro.
Like at first I was like, I was re-listening and I was like, "Oh, this is kind of dope." I was like, "It's very 2000, but it's kind of dope. It's kind of dope." Well, it's still going. Well, and then, that's it. Oh, okay. Then that's when the next song kicked in. I was like, "Well, that didn't seem very necessary." That's the way I felt about it.
I want someone to redo that, but have it be like, "Confused Breakfast Podcast." Like, it'd be our newer intro.
And then it'll fade out, and then our actual song will
say. That's the way to go.
There we go.
But let's go on track two. So track two being Hot Dog. This song, like, this is the one with all the fucks in it.
Fucking rips. Yeah, dude.
This is one of my favorites on the album.
This song
rips.
To be honest, I do, and we'll get into it, but I do think this is a pretty front heavy album.
Are you kidding me?
Like, you get some variety in the back half, I think, and you get some like kind of surprising, like, "Oh, that's kind of good songwriting right there," you know? But yeah, as far as like the fucking frat boy, what you come for Limp Bizkit, it is pretty front heavy.
And this is after Woodstock has already happened. Yeah. All that shit went down. Fred is enemy number one. And so he's coming at you with this song right off the bat.
Yeah.
And so what did you read much about like the Trent Reznor stuff?
Well, I guess Fred Durst is a fan.
Fred Durst apparently was like a huge fan of Nine Inch Nails, as everyone should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, I guess he tried to like talk to Trent Reznor once or at an award show, but Trent Reznor like started ripping on him making fun of Fred Durst and Limp Bizkit. So
unfortunately that seems like very Trent Reznor.
It does. Right. Yeah. And then this then feels very Fred Durst to then literally make all these Nine Inch Nails get knocked the fuck out. Yeah. And then the chorus basically being every
fuck me like basically ever. The reverse of it.
Perfect drug, closer.
Yeah.
But then I guess apparently they didn't ask for permission to technically use their lyrics.
Right. I was wondering about this.
And they already sent it off to print, and then they tried to ask Trent Reznor, and Trent Reznor's like, "No." Cause you're literally like making fun of me in this.
So,
but
Does it just make so much money that
no? Yeah, he eventually, from what I read, Trent Reznor eventually said, "You know what?
Whatever.
Fine. I'm an artist as well. I don't want to hold up your album because of this. You've already done the work. Fine." Okay. And I think he has a songwriting credit in the liner notes. Maybe he makes a little bit of money off of it, but I don't know. It just, I couldn't tell if it was like a good or a bad thing that he was saying these things about Trent Reznor, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, these lyrics are dog shit. Like, we're just gonna say it. Like,
whose lyrics are dog shit? Trent Reznor's or Trent Durst?
Very true. Well, so dog shit that he has to take someone else's, I guess. But I don't know. Dog shit and infantile in the way that it's, you know, well, you was a bully to me, you know. I mean, I get writing about those feelings for sure, but just being so on the nose and blunt about it, I don't know.
I just, all I can think of now is like Fred Durst trying to get an autograph and an old school autograph book or something. Be like, Trent? Hey, Trent.
It's me, Fred Durst.
It's me, Fred. Remember? Will you sign this? Get out of here, nerd. And then, like, he's like, oh.
I'll get you, Trent.
I'll get you, Trent Reznor. Oh.
My guess is that Fred Durst has sold more albums than Trent Reznor had.
Ooh, bummer.
Well, okay.
I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there.
I didn't hear his name on the top 23 album sales. So.
Throwing it out there.
Just saying.
He does say 46 fucks in this song. You know how many are in the entire album?
How many?
170. So like a fourth of them roughly were in this song, and that's a fuck every 26 seconds.
You know, we have said on the show before that that word can be kind of a crutch in creative works as a spoken language.
Yeah,
you know, I think that he's got at least two crutches and is not impaired at all, and he just leans on them.
Yeah.
Well, I think the first song might be a testament to that. Maybe he had more lyrics he had to throw away or something, and so he was just like, well, fuckity fuck fuckity fuck 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 fuck.
And they're like, it's too much.
It's a lot of F-bombs. You sure you want to fuckity fuck fuck fuck? All right.
Were you recording? Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep it going.
Make it an outro song. I don't know.
Because you told me to. Nope. First song on the album.
Well, track three is My Generation, and we are going to implement some things here. We're going to do best and worst lyrics if you have them by chance.
Okay. We don't give a fuck and tell you, give a fuck about me.
Do you like that lyric?
I like the sentiment.
I was just going to say that. Like, the sentiment is so true.
Yeah.
But the delivery of it's kind of like, yeah.
I think you just described Limp Bizkit in a nutshell.
Like, yeah.
Just saying.
Listen, hey, man, until you care about me and my friends, like, we're not going to respect you at all.
Yeah.
Nope. We don't give a fuck. We're never going to give a fuck until you give a fuck about fucking us.
Yeah.
I mean, us.
And my generation.
Yeah.
Yeah, like our whole generation.
Our crew, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I get behind that. That's like, you know, skateboarding through the mall and be like, why the fuck can't I skateboard through the mall? Fuck your old ass, you know? Give a fuck about me or I'm not going to give a fuck about your dumb mall.
Hey, I care about you, but it's also important that you're doing safe things and that you don't skateboard through the mall because you could end up hurting someone or somebody else.
You don't give a fuck about me or my generation.
No, I'm trying to tell you that I literally care about your well-being and safety.
No, it doesn't sound like it, old man.
Please, excuse me, sir, young sir. Please, I just want you to be safe.
Puts headphones on. Yeah, don't give up.
That actually is not my worst lyric, though. My worst lyric is, John Otto, take us to the Matthews Bridge.
But that beat comes in, dude. Okay, can we talk about
John Otto?
Can we talk about the audio of this? Like the songwriting and the guitar riffs and the mix in general. I think this is one of the best mixed albums ever made, maybe?
Potentially, yes. I know what you're saying. Like,
it's just the music is so cohesive and flows together so well. And I really think that Wes Borland and John Otto being the drummer, right? Yeah.
John Otto. He goes to the Matthews Bridge.
He goes there. He's always there.
Yeah.
I will say, I think, and this may be too deep of a statement for talking about Limp Bizkit, but I think that the 2000s and just kind of in that range had some of the best mixing, some of the best like mastering, some of the best like music quality studio albums really like coming out at that point in time. I just, for some reason, just makes me think that it was like the best time for the best mix of new technology and analog equipment. They're still doing it all on a board, but they're still
a lot of times they were still recording some of the tape.
But
then they were mixing digitally, which is like the best of both worlds.
See, and that's the thing. It's like they're mixing, like you said, the best of both worlds. It's all coming through the right way. And even Limp Bizkit gets this. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like an album like this will get that. And I agree with you though. I think it's the quality's there. I don't know if it was this song or not that it certainly sounded like it was like a ping snare, like a piccolo snare. Pong,
pong.
I think I know what breakdown you're talking about.
But it was pretty nu metal. Stanger.
Yes. I think you're talking about the one where DJ Lethal bring it, like before
that's
that.
That is this song.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think you are. I think my note is
thank God DJs and songs aren't a thing anymore. It's so pointless to have a DJ in a song.
Let me mix it up for you.
Is that not sick though?
It is to the extent of how unique it was. Like no one had ever really done stuff like this in rock, rap, DJs, guitars, but like it doesn't do anything for me anymore. Right now, I'm just like, huh.
Yeah. I think Incubus.
So go ahead and talk. Shit.
Incubus was really one of the last greats to incorporate.
Maybe it's
in.
The tastefulness of it. Like, okay. Hey, help work in some samples. Yeah. But this is when it's like. To your testament about the audio, though, my wife and I were listening to this on Friday on the way to, we got a little getaway.
Nice.
And we were both just in the car just going. She basically is like, this is me in high school. You know, like it was flooding a rush of memories back to her. And that's part of the beauty of the audio of the 2000s. Something about it just takes you to a place.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of those songs that you'll always think of. Like,
yeah.
I'll tell you one thing that is weird about watching movies from 25 plus years ago. It's the fact that no one has any cell phones. Obviously, nowadays, we're glued to our phones. We need them to survive. That's what makes it so frustrating when, A, you're getting ripped off by these overpriced wireless providers with their fine print contracts, and you end up with a ridiculous bill every month, and B, it never even works right, always dropping service when you need it the most. I've tried 4 different service providers in the last decade, and none of them have fixed any of these problems for me. So when I first heard about Mint Mobile offering premium wireless starting at $15 a month, I thought, what's the catch here, Ryan Reynolds? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't a catch. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Before I switched over to Mint Mobile, I was paying $400 a month for 2 lines. Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for $15 a month. And that plan comes with unlimited talk and text plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. It's flexible too. Choose from 3, 6, or 12-month plans and say goodbye to a monthly phone bill. Mint Mobile gives you the best rate whether you're buying for one or a family. And at Mint, families start at 2 lines. That's it. You and your special someone, boom, here's a family plan for Valentine's Day. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all existing contacts. It took me 5 minutes to sign up and completely switch over. And the best part, I didn't even have to go to one of those dumb stores, wait around for an hour while the new guy who just started working there couldn't figure out how to work his iPad. Switch to Mint Mobile. Join the cool kids who like to save money. Get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free. Go to mintmobile.com/confused. mintmobile.com/confused. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/confused. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
And actually, to go back to Fred Durst and his lyrics, it just seems like this album is basically just pop culture references.
It really is.
He just says things that are in pop culture.
Obviously, he had kind of a... He was feeling what, you know, teenagers were feeling at the time too, but he was making a shit ton of money while doing it. The whole Woodstock 99 thing was, I really don't think that's their fault at all. You know, I think it's the managers of the festival and everything. You know, I, it's their responsibility. They get paid to entertain, and that's what they fucking did.
Yes.
You know, it's not, you know, it's nothing else is their fault.
And it's MTV's fault, a lot of it too, for being the ones that pointed the blame directly at Limp Bizkit. When they literally said nothing about any other band that played that weekend and that helped ignite that shit.
Yeah.
Limp Bizkit was just the cinder that just fell on top of it. Yeah. You know, like everything else was built up ready for it. But yeah, dude, I don't like the negativity that they got from that.
I don't either. I
mean, and it really led into this. Like this album became the thing that made everybody go fuck Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
Like they're too popular.
I think that he has something to say, and I think that what he's trying to say is poignant and you know, of the time, like these especially males, I'm sure is their largest audience.
Yes,
you know, we're feeling a lot of angst at the time, and they brought it. You know, they got the filter and let it into their house, and they could let it out. You know, and you know, it's not like poetic lyrics, but he's just saying what needs to be said, I guess. You know.
But he's also just going, like on this song, he says, "Welcome to the jungle. One flew over the cuckoo's nest."
Guess
he references
who's next?
Titanic. He just like references just, here's pop culture stuff. That
here's a thing.
Here's a thing that you know about. He's not the best lyricist ever born. Let's just put it that way.
No.
These are books that I think about. Like, it's like his recommendation list or something.
That's basically what it is. Track four,
Death
though.
Death of a Salesman.
One flew over the cuckoo's nest. Confused Breakfast Podcast. I told you to kill a mockingbird.
I told you.
I think Fred would like our podcast.
I think so,
I think
too.
He'd be into it.
Fred, hey, Fred, do you want to be a guest?
Sponsor He's us? A filmmaker, dude.
Fog? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, dude.
Track four, though, Full Nelson. I'm not going to say this is my favorite, but it's top three for me.
Yeah?
Do you like this song?
I mean, like I said, it's... when I bought this album, I really didn't go past Roland.
Okay. You know? So you heard this one.
Oh, definitely.
And you love this.
I do like this song a lot.
I liked the song a lot upon re-listen. It was one that I was like, oh yeah, I remember this part of this song. Like,
yeah.
Again, that's about what I got out of it though.
Just something about his, I think he's one of the best like screamers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I you know, and he's got that aggressive singing style anyway, like knock straight the fuck out. Mm-hmm. But at the end when he's like, burn this motherfucker down, like he's so underrated in his ability to literally just get you fucking amped up.
Yeah.
You cannot help but listen to this song and this album and just be like, let's
and dude,
go.
If you have like an air raid siren in the background of your song, I'm in. I don't know what it is. It's like, you know, having the cast of characters at the end of the movie. I will love it every time.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because like even like Rage Against the Machine would open up with like an air raid siren and then intro to their whatever song. And I just get so fucking pumped. Like, I don't know. And like... that really low tune, I'm assuming like drop A-ish.
It's gotta be. That's
around
the time.
There. It just sounds so good. Boom, boom, boom. You know, it's so pumping. And then
as those harmonics in the chorus.
Yeah, I do agree with you. Like that, this is maybe his best lyrical kind of stuff. That's the more angsty side.
Yes.
I think.
And you were talking about it on the last song, Wes Borland. I think gets some negativity just due to maybe his flashiness of like wearing the outfits and being in Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
I think Wes Borland might be one of the greatest rock and roll guitarists of all time.
I'm going with you on that. Yeah.
I think he's certainly one of the most original rock and roll guitarists of all time. Like,
did you hear their newest album that they just put out?
Mm-mm.
I'll play it for you after this. The one of the riffs that he plays in there is like, what just happened? Mm. How are you doing this? I think he's one of the best, and I think this it's what happens when you combine a guy that wants to do that with a guy that wants to do that, and somehow try to put them together.
Well, he wanted to combine, like he was a performance artist, you know, and he would do that just in his normal life, like go on the street and just look fucking weird, you know. As like an art performance,
yep.
But then he is a great guitar player and melded the two.
He's like, I guess I'll just. He probably was coming off of the street performance. I was like, oh crap, I'm late for the show. And he's like, what, Wes? What are you wearing?
I don't know.
This is my new thing.
I great, I have to do it every show now.
Crap.
Track five, though, My Way.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about My Way? This kind of mid-tempo, spacey Limp Bizkit vibe is sort of my... I think that's where they really shine.
I think this is one of the best songs, in my opinion.
Is this the best song?
No, okay. Not in my opinion. But yeah, I like... It's a spacey's a good way to put it, I think.
Especially
like,
the verses, you know?
Yeah, they the sonically, this one's like more out of left field than the other ones are so far. It seems like a more like kind of rock song than like a heavy metal-ish kind of thing.
Yeah, this is one I get really torn on because when it came on, I was like, oh boy. here's the late 90s, early 2000s that we really needed to make this a 2000s album, which is that kind of slower, like you say, you know, lower tempo. Okay. You're just slowing it down. And I feel like I'm listening to Stained on an upbeat, on an upswing or something. I don't know what's going on. It's just the way I felt.
Didn't really like this song.
I wasn't as big of a fan, but it also could have been in my anticipation for the next song. So let's just be real.
Well, before we move on to that, I also have to say too, like, I think they have some of the best fucking hooks ever.
I don't disagree with you there.
They're when they get to their, you know, their pre-choruses and everything, like as the bridge comes, is fucking so dope. Like their chill out, and then like especially even Full Nelson too, that but keeping that with no distortion, and then just bringing it in later, dude, it is so hooky and so good.
Well, you get to track six. This is Roland Air Raid Vehicle. Gotta specify which one this is. This is the main one that you know. I'm going to go on a limb here, and I'm going to say that Roland is my favorite cliche Limp Bizkit single.
Yeah.
Like, I'll take Roland over Nookie, over Break Stuff, over Faith. Like, Roland's my cliche Limp Bizkit jam.
Yeah.
Okay. Not my favorite song on this album, but if you're talking, like, the cliche Limp Bizkit stuff, I think this is my jam.
Okay.
This is the song that I have to imagine that they have to be sick of playing at this point. Because they've just got a bunch of like dudes looking like Vin Diesel in the front row, just like stoked to just wanting to hear their quarter mile anthem. Just dude,
keep rolling,
rock and rolling.
It's ecstasy, right?
Corona.
No, it's cars,
family. Family.
I saw him live, and
that was just recently, right?
A few years ago, okay. Like 2021 or so. Spirit Box opened up for him, which was fucking tight. And when they got on stage, they played this song, and Mike Vallely, the professional skateboarder,
hell yeah,
came out and was singing with him and doing the call and response kind of thing with this. It was pretty fucking dope.
That's
I liked it live. This time, I got to be honest, it kind of wears on me a little bit.
Oh, no, I hear you.
Yeah.
If there is a race car movie that doesn't have this song in the soundtrack, then I think we all know where they're making their money at this point. It's a, hey, we're producing another car movie. Can we get your song in this? Well, I don't know. He likes to play hard to get with it. He's like, of course you can. You want it? You can have it. It's just going to be $15
million. It's in our contract that whenever a car movie gets made, it's already going to be in there.
You actually can't get a license.
That's like having fun with you.
That's exactly what
you can't get a license to make a movie about cars without like already agreeing to have this in there.
You go down to film in LA and they ask for your LB sign off.
It's a punch card.
Do you have your LB 137?
What's that?
Wait, nobody gave us that one. Oh boy. You didn't know about the LB 137.
Is Roland in your movie? Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, then you lucked out because if it wasn't, you were going to have to go back and edit it and put it in there.
Thank God.
It was already in there.
If you've started production on it and it wasn't in there, then we'd have issues. Just sign this and that you're going to pay them what they need for it.
It's Fred Durst trying to make the movie. He's like, I didn't even know about this.
He's dressed up as a woman at the DMV or like the parks office.
Oh my God.
I think we just made a new music video for Fred Durst,
we
guys.
We did.
Get him on the phone.
Call up Fred. Fred.
Yeah.
Track seven, Living It Up.
That's how he answers the phone.
He answers the phone.
Yeah.
Ladies.
This track seven, Living It Up, this is my favorite song on the album.
Okay.
Anybody going to join me on this?
Living It Up, not giving a fuck? No, that's
yeah. This is when it says something about the. Here, I'll play it for you real quick. The verses of this song just are amazing. Like this is musically
fast lane.
Stuffish is my main friend Durst. In this part where he goes like it's something about the drum part on that starship navigation system.
Yeah.
Like this band can groove.
Yeah, dude.
Like this song does it for me. I don't necessarily like that it's a sample of like in the fast lane.
Yeah.
But and he also says, I've seen the Fight Club about 28 times. Me in October of 2000 has also seen the Fight Club about 28 times at that point.
Hey, Mike, you want a movie made for you? Here you go. Hey, Mike, you want an album made for you?
There you go.
Here you go. We're also going to reference that movie.
We basically just gave you everything you needed. Let's see. How old were you then, Mike? You were in your 20s.
I was 18.
18?
Oh. Going on 19.
19.
When this album came out.
This is what every 18 going on 27 year old needed.
I was 1 year away from becoming like, from fully falling into like indie music and like underground.
Yeah.
Stuff like because I was starting to play it
and wearing a lot
of
scarves.
This was probably this and
many rings.
Yeah, this and Issues by Korn were like the last mainstream albums that I was like, yeah,
yeah.
And then from here on out, I'm gone. But at this moment in time, I'm like, yeah.
Then on, it was Dave Matthews and John Mayer.
That was to get the girls straight.
Oasis.
This riff in the chorus, I guess. It's just so simple, but so fucking good. And I think like even going, this is like my favorite probably like verse of Durst's going into verse a chorus
Durst. Durst first
like that the flow of that in this song is just peak I think on this album.
And they even throw in a change of time signature in that chorus or in the bridge, like gotta get a don't gotta get a bunch. So I mean like even the technicality of changing you don't change time signatures in a rock masses song, you know, like rock for the frat bros. You do not change time signature, but they do it and it works.
You go to 3/4 and you disrupt their 4/4, boy, they're going to be upset.
My clapping is off. What happened?
You're doing it wrong. No, I am.
That's my favorite song on the album. Track 8 is the one. It's not my least favorite, but this song's just very for me. This is where it falls off.
I mean, like. If it wasn't 5 minutes and 44 seconds, I probably would like
it. Well, it's because there's like this weird hidden song on there.
Yeah.
Which doesn't even make sense.
Like, again, I like the musicality, and I do like that you can kind of see Fred Durst singing a little bit, which is not bad at all.
No.
And I do like love all those things about it, but if you go past 3:30, I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, agree. I've had enough.
I agree. Especially in a song that's not good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that you say, also the idea of having a hidden track, that seems like an idea that a child would come up with, like in the middle of the album. Hey, let's do a secret track. Well, and you gotta listen through in order to, it's like, I don't
Did you
think
guys
that's
own Significant
idea.
Other, the no. album before this? Mind-blowing stuff here that people of today's generation will never understand. Significant Other had negative time on it. So if you got to the end of song 4, and if you actually let it get to the end of song 4, it would go into negative space and play a hidden track, like 20 seconds of a hidden track for you that you could not get to unless you get to the end of song 4. If you're mid song 4 and you fast forward to song, or you just click to song 5, you go to song 5.
I see what you're saying.
It's like this negative timing
that
you can only do on CDs.
There's a couple albums that I really like that do that. And I guess, you know, like Spotify would allow that.
Now it's just on there. I think it's just at the end of the song.
Yeah, but like you're like, what? The song is over. It was only three minutes, 30 seconds, but it's 5 minutes long. What's going on? Yeah, you have to wait. I do like that little secret, but
only if it's good.
I guess you're right. It does seem a little like, I have an idea.
I have an idea and I want to do this in the middle of the album.
It'll be hilarious.
It's like, it'll be people won't even know it's there. It's like, but they're going to let it play. I don't know what you're saying, man. I don't know. I get it now.
Speaking of forced, like I feel like track 9 got to get a groove on. You know, cause if you go back to the last album, they did the same thing. They had a rap track on there called In Together Now.
Yeah.
which is like pretty good. It's pretty good, like rap rock. Yeah, this one just feels very forced to me. Like, we got to put a hip hop song on here, and we got to get Exhibit.
What up, dog? I heard you like chocolate starfish and hot dog flavored water, so we got you a car full of hot dogs, flavored water, and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yo, what's up, dog? I heard you like music in your music, so I'm here to lay down a verse. Thanks,
like,
Exhibit.
I heard you like a little rap with your rock. Here I am.
Here I am. It's just like
I
a
love
cheesy,
Exhibit.
Yeah, like, I know. I love Limp Bizkit. I love Exhibit. This just doesn't work.
It's kind of a bad song, and
it's
shouldn't
just a
be.
Bad beat in general. Yeah. And like, although this is my favorite lyric of the album. You gotta hate that a demo from an 8-track brought me to a place where platinum comes in 8 stacks, bitch.
Oh, damn.
I like Brain. That.
He makes
like
a lot
that.
Of money.
I like that a lot. 8 stacks platinum, like sold 8 million copies
8 million
of his
copies.
Last album.
Yeah.
From a demo from an 8-track.
He didn't know he's about to go triple 700 platinum?
7 million platinum.
7 million.
Yeah. 7 million platinum.
Track 10, though, Take a Look Around. What do you know about this track? Do you know the history on this one?
Dude, I see here that Lalo Schifrin has a credit on this, and he is a prolific composer.
It's probably from the 007 lick.
100%.
It has to be, right?
I did not put that together until you just said that. Thank
just
you.
Just the putting the notes together in this form.
Yes, 100% right. Wow, I'm a fucking idiot. This is my favorite on the album.
Is it? Okay, yeah. Do you know that this was on the Mission Impossible 2 soundtrack?
Yes.
That came out before this.
That's probably why I'm putting it together.
Yes.
Now. That's probably where I heard the song and where I liked Limp Bizkit and I got this album.
It would have been the summer of 2000. And apparently this just took off like crazy. Like, this was the track of the soundtrack of the movie. It actually got nominated for a Grammy for Best Hard Rock Performance.
Oh, right on.
This song from the
soundtrack.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Because the album hadn't come out yet. But dude, it hit number 15 on the mainstream rock charts, number 8 for modern rock tracks, and they credit that with leading towards the success of this album.
Okay.
Because it was like this little crest of a wave, like you just said.
Yeah.
You were like, oh, this is fucking tight. Oh, they got a new album coming out.
And that's a good soundtrack, too. Yes. That Mission Impossible 2 soundtrack. They had Rage on there. I think that's probably where I first heard Rage. They had a Metallica song on there.
Oh, yeah, that Metallica song was dope.
It's pretty good.
I can't remember
even
the name
of it,
though.
Even though that's like Saint Anger era. Yeah.
No, that's Load and Reload.
Okay.
I think that's, which is okay.
Oh, and Rob Zombie was on there, too. Yes.
Let's see, Mission Impossible 2.
That was a good one. That was like one that I remember way more actually than the original.
The Mission movie Impossible. Or
the movie?
Okay,
yeah.
And I think I watched it.
You know what? I think that has a pretty good play in it. Honestly, like that song, like
okay.
I don't know, like a lot of those action sequences, whatever. It's like, yeah, no, this makes perfect sense. It's fine. It's whatever.
I remember in that movie, like one of the last scenes, it was like. The bad guy, they were like fighting on the beach, and a bad guy like goes to stab Tom Cruise as he's like on the ground, and the knife gets like inches away from his eyeball.
From his eye.
And my mom was always like, yeah, they just put a string on the knife and it caught like right before it got to his eye. And now I'm thinking like
they would never allow that to be the thing that stops that from ruining Tom Cruise
or his stuntman.
No, it's Tom Cruise.
No. Track 11, this is my least fave. It'll Be Okay. This is just feels like they needed one more song, and Wes Borland had all these cool riffs, but none of them really worked together, and you just kind of did them together, and they just like this. This song just does not do it for me.
Just seems like that riff salad that they just didn't have. It's like, well,
it just didn't come together.
Here's some unfinished ideas, so let's kind of knock it out.
Yeah, it's my least favorite for sure.
How does this one go?
Want to hear it?
It'll be okay. That's it.
I think that's it.
I think that's basically what it is.
How about you don't tell me what to do? Ugh.
It'll be.
Here you go.
Don't reassure me.
It's like tight. It's like really cool riffs.
Yeah. I think it's the one too where like he just kind of keeps that low.
Yeah.
And it's distorted a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I like that part of it. But yeah, overall, it's too long.
Yep. Everything's too long. Track 12, though, Boiler, Jarrett Leoff in the Little Lebowski Urban Achievers, he said this is his favorite. It's not my favorite, but I agree. Like, this song's fucking badass.
It's a banger. Yeah.
Although it very much exemplifies the thoughts behind nu metal. Like, you can't have a nu metal era album without screaming why a lot in the lyrics. And pretty much the end of the song is him just going, why?
God? Again, that riff too is just like, a lot of the time I'm listening to, especially this song or an earlier track on here, I'm not sure, but I'm like not knowing or realizing or picturing in my head how he's performing this riff, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what tuning he's in. It's got to be something real low, but usually I can kind of pick that thing out. But with this, especially this song, I'm just like, man, I don't know what you're doing. It just sounds like
it's produced really
well. You're doing
too.
A soundscape on guitar, but it's heavy and angry and angsty, you know? Really cool shit. Yeah.
And there's a weird little bass drop in there on the chorus.
Yeah.
Why'd you have to go and be something like boom?
Like you. Yeah, dude. It's sick.
Track 13, I want to know what you think about this. This is the one with Scott Weiland and him. No drums, very slow song. Like, I really want to like this song, but I just don't. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just the Scott Weiland and Fred Durst together with no drums.
Yeah.
A 6-minute long ballad.
Like, again, it was cool to hear him like sing melodies.
Yeah.
But that's not for 6 minutes or 5 minutes and 48 seconds.
No, with no drums.
Yeah. No. Like, this whole thing runs at 75 minutes.
Now, a lot of that's maybe the outro that we haven't got to yet.
A lot of it is.
But still, that's still, take the outro away, that's still
it's
a
still
lot.
Probably an hour. Yes.
You got any on that one, AJ?
Because
we're going to get into rolling urban assault vehicle.
Here we go, baby. UAV.
Which do you prefer of the Roland tracks?
No, I prefer the air raid vehicle. But I don't know. There's something about this that you're like, oh yeah, no, this is definitely like Fast and the Furious. I don't know, 3, not 1, right? Or this is you know, they wanted Ja Rule in Gone in 60 Seconds, but they couldn't get him. You know, that kind of a thing, but. I don't know. This is fine. It's fine. It's fine.
My note is I'm never going to hear this song again, and I'm good with that. Because like at first you're like, yeah, I love Method Man.
Yeah.
I love Red Man. I love DMX when he's not barking. But then you get to the end of this song, and it's just like, again, we're 6 minutes in, and it's bump that shit with DMX barking in the background, and you're like, this. No, this is those moments where you're just like, you need someone in control to be like, no.
You're being obnoxious.
This is not good.
Cool it,
hey,
guys.
You understand this is a studio album, right? It's a studio album.
Yes.
It's a studio album.
You can do that live at the Grammys.
Stop it. Stop.
He also, you think he tried out barks?
He tried out.
I think it was like, on accident. Like he barked one time.
He did like a poodle once. He's like, ah! No, I don't really like that. Yeah.
You think anyone's ever liked his poodle? Anyone's ever put that on one of their tracks?
Yeah.
Like he's like, oh yeah, Nicki Minaj called me up. And that's like arr! Yeah, that's like
yeah, R.I.P. R.I.P. DMX.
Rip in peace.
Another R.I.P. here. We got the outro track. We gotta talk about Ben Stiller.
He's dead?
Yeah. I'm just joking. No, he's not. The outro, this outro, did you listen to the whole thing? Please tell me you did.
Yes.
You listened to the whole, AJ didn't listen to the whole thing.
I mean, like when it became repeating Ben Stiller, like high laughing, I had to skip a bit. I'm like, I cannot do this. It's just because I thought it was, one, I do like that he's just fucking high out of his mind, like hanging out. It seems in the studio with Limp Bizkit.
You know, apparently they were good friends, Ben Stiller and Fred Durst. And Ben came to visit them in the studio, and Fred was basically like, will you just like talk badly about us on microphone for a little bit? And I get they were probably high or drunk.
Dude,
or something.
He's high.
Tell me he doesn't sound like Paul Rudd for a second.
Yeah.
Like the way young Ben Stiller sort of sounds like Paul Rudd to me.
Okay.
A little bit in that audio. But yeah, whoever, again, said this would be so funny if we just dude, we should just take Ben Stiller's really high laugh and we should do it for 3 minutes straight.
It is
dude,
just the fact that he's here. I mean, we got to do something.
We have to. We have to record his voice.
It would be so funny. I mean, it's funny enough just him laughing, but then, like, let's make it for 3 minutes.
It's literally filler. Like,
for no reason.
You're extending filler. And it's overstays its welcome, to say the least.
We told him we'd give him 75 minutes, guys. We told him we'd give him 75 minutes.
Part of our contract, it has to be 75 minutes.
Yeah, well, let's give him 75 minutes and 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Got him.
15 songs, including an intro and outro. Something's got to be good in there.
Do you know who the voicemails were at the end? AJ didn't hear it.
But I did not hear it.
Do you know who the three guys were in the voicemails at the end? The first one was Stephen Jenkins, the singer of Third Eye Blind. The one who's like, man, where are you at right now? I'm London. Well, call me when you get back, man. That was Third Eye Blind singer. The second one was Rob Dyrdek.
Oh, wow.
Talking about, man, you got to come see my skate park, bro. It's so sick. Huh. Like, this is before many people even knew who Rob Dyrdek was. And the last one is Mark Wahlberg.
Oh.
He says, I didn't see you last night. It was a voicemail. I was like, didn't see you last night, man. You said you're in New York, and what's this bullshit? I got a call, and you got to screen your calls, man. Call me back. I wish I could have something like that. Okay, bye.
What the fuck?
Yeah, this is Mark Wahlberg. Like, this is the height of Fred Durst, man. Dude, so he's got everybody.
He was a celebrity.
Yes, he was.
And can we talk about it a little bit, where it's like the tongue-in-cheek aspect? I think he's trolling everyone.
I think so, too.
I think this is a big fucking joke to him. You know, like, he's making money off of a bit.
Yeah.
And especially, like, even when I saw him, he was in his grandpa era, you know.
So cool.
Which I was into, you know. You know, think what you want about him, but he's kind of a fucking genius when it comes to marketing.
I think he's like Pauly Shore. Like, we talk about that kind of stuff where that we wanted it so bad and they spoon fed it down our throats to where then we didn't like it anymore.
Yeah.
But it's not his fault.
Right.
It was the oversaturation of him. Same with Pauly Shore. We talked about this with one other person, but where they just get a bad rap because there was just too much of them in society. And, like, I really respect not many bands. I can barely go back and listen to, like, Korn. I can't listen to Godsmack or, like, Stained. I'm just like, God, this is fucking trash. I can go back and listen to any Limp Bizkit. Those first three Limp Bizkit albums, their new one, like, I fucking love it.
Stoked to hear it.
I'll play you a riff after this, but I think this album, it's definitely not my favorite Limp Bizkit album, but this is, like, this is the year 2000.
It's iconic.
It is completely.
Like I said, like, the front heaviness of this is, you know, not a lot of actual albums can touch it.
No.
To be honest.
Yeah. It's got some really iconic moments on it that even for a person like me who didn't, like, necessarily hear it a bunch when you were younger and everything, but you still know exactly what's happening and what's coming next when you hear this song, when you hear one of the songs on here. So, I mean, it's great, man. Like, it's a perfectly fine, great, good 2000 album.
It's fun.
It's fun
to listen to.
Because it's sonically pleasing. It's easy to listen to.
It's well put together. It's well, or, like, you know, it's well produced. And it's as in that studio era, 2000s era, for everything that came from. Yeah, I mean, it's enjoyable, you know. I think it's important. It's not taking itself too seriously. And that's a big reason as to why you can go back.
That's why you can't listen to Godsmack or Stained.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, because I bought into that at one point.
We will be running this front to back the whole weekend of my bachelor party, so you guys know.
Well, you guys are all invited to Sean's bachelor party. Call us up. We'll tell you where it's at. You just owe a little bit of cash. Bring a sleeping bag. It's going to be a good time. And let us know other iconic albums from the 80s, 90s, 2000s that you think we should talk about next.
Yeah.
Dare you.
It's double dare.
Okay.
All right.
Keep rolling.
Hey, guys. I'm Maggie Lawson.
And I'm her podcast partner in crime, Timothy Albinson.
And we are the hosts of your new favorite show, The Psychologists Are In. Each week, we go episode by episode talking about our favorite moments from psych, sharing behind-the-scenes stories, incredible memories, and even have drop-ins from our best friends and fellow cast and crew. If this sounds up your alley, listen to The Psychologists Are In on the iHeart app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.